Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, Nats Town. Welcome to Nats Nightly, where tonight we'll discuss FBI Direct. Oh, wait, that's the wrong script. Nats Nightly, sponsored by Federal Baseball. Tonight we'll discuss the Washington Nationals' walk-off win over the Baltimore Orioles. Doghouse, is your phone all right?
It cuts my finger when I try to use the touchscreen, but it still seems to work.
That is no bueno. Washington Nationals went into the ninth inning. Brad Brock, the Orioles closer on the mound. 6-4 Orioles at that point. Jason Worth, an epic 11-pitch at-bat, battles Brock, ends up homering to right center field. One-run game at that point. Some people were starting to believe. Some of us went and wrote two extra paragraphs to keep aside just in case we had to erase our previous game story and fill in with a comeback. Bryce Harper, opposite field double in the next at-bat. Ryan Zimmerman grounds out, deflates the crowd a little bit here in the nation's capital. Daniel Murphy gets the intentionals. They put him on base in front of Anthony Rendon. Big mistake. Anthony Rendon singles the center, as I just wrote in my game story here. Rendon singled the center, but Nats third base coach Bob Henley, nicknamed Bob Senley for his tendency to wave him around, held Harper up. Matt Wieters steps in next. Base is loaded, one out. Single to right field, drives in. They give him two runs, even though they only needed one. 7-6 Nationals. Matt Wieters, a former Orioles catcher, comes back to haunt his former team. The Nationals avoid a four-game losing streak, an improbable comeback in the nation's capital. Doghouse, I know you were here, too, watching it. I was sitting high above the crowd watching this one. What a great ending for the Nationals, and really big win to avoid losing the four straight.
Boy, you really couldn't write it any better than it happened. I mean, the way Worth started off that inning, how many times have we seen him do exactly that? Work the long AB. I guess the only difference is that he didn't come back from 0-2 to work the full count and foul off a bunch of things. I think it was like 2-2 or something. And then, you know, hits the dramatic solo shot. Of course, that wasn't the walk-off itself, so I guess that's the difference there. It was just, you know, the home run to get everyone else fired up. But then a great sequence of ABs after that there to set up the go-ahead. And I got to say, it was a little disheartening, not that I'm going to grumble about a win, that Zim didn't get the walk-off again because, you know, he's done it so many times. You just want to see him do it every time. Especially given the resurgence he's had so far this season, how great would that have been? But really, the second greatest thing, Matt Wieters, and I remind everyone I was against this signing, comes to the plate against his former team and, you know, against a really fired-up crowd. You know, the biggest moment in baseball, okay, I guess it wasn't two outs. You know, just steps right up there and immediately lines. So I said it wasn't for. I meant to say it wasn't with two outs. steps up and lines one right past the first baseman there to score the tying and go ahead runs. Beautiful, perfect. The reason we go to baseball games.
I absolutely love this Dusty Baker quote afterwards. Talking about Jason Worth at bat, how he kept on fouling him off and seemed like he was getting closer to squaring one up. Dusty Baker says he was just trying to make contact first. That's a determination at bat. If every at bat the guys have that much determination, then they'd never make out. But something happens when you're down to your last breath, and guys seem to find more determination from somewhere, and I'm glad he did. He could really go for all those at bats in that inning, though. I mean, everyone was kind of locked in there. The game's on the line. That's why it's such a hard job. We complain about the closers the Nationals have tried out there. It's not easy for anyone out there. Guys are locked in at the end there. Those last three outs, the cliche saying goes, are the hardest ones to get. But once again, that proved true tonight.
Yeah. Really, for all that we didn't see much to show for it for the rest of the game, the Nats were putting together some good at-bats pretty much the whole time. If you look at the relative pitch counts, Strauss, although he gave up five runs in six innings, you know, he was only up right around 100 pitches through six. What's his name? Miley. He was, I think, 120 or something. Five.
He got up to 116, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. It was, the Nats were really making him work. And, you know, had some potential rallies that, you know, didn't really work out. But they were being patient. They were drawing some walks, and in some cases making some good contact. Really good at bats all evening, and then it finally came together in the ninth. You know, I would have at the time I always prefer a more relaxing game with a comfortable lead the whole evening, but in retrospect, you know, that makes this game much better. Only in retrospect.
As I attempt to out humble you after your comments about not liking the Weider signing, I believe we had a discussion before the game this afternoon when I walked down to visit with you guys where I said, about time we get Michael Taylor out of there, right? He's had enough opportunities. Maybe we should get Andrew Stevenson up here, maybe give Brian Goodwin his shot. So Michael Taylor shows me. Might get lost in the shuffle with the big walk-off win in the end, but the reason they were able to come back like they did is because Michael Taylor got them within two in the eighth inning. Daniel Murphy singled to start the frame. Two outs later, the former Phillies reliever Alec Asher, who I didn't know was on the Orioles until he took the mound there, came out, struck out Anthony Rendon, struck out Matt Wieters. Michael Taylor comes in. I think he worked the count full, too, which really impressive at bat from Michael A. Taylor there. You don't see a lot of them from him, so you got to give him full credit when he does. Home run to left center field, just an absolute line drive blast out to the left field, 6-4 at that point. He also drove in a run earlier in the game, two runs in the game for him, pulling up the box scores. I can see how he ended up doing on the night, but where are you, Michael? 2-for-4, run scored, 3 RBIs. He had the 2 Ks, which you come to expect from him, but that was a really big at-bat there in the eighth inning. Like I said, might get overlooked, but a big blast for Michael A to get him on the board. Dusty Baker said after the game, he's been struggling late and he's making contact, which is an understatement, of course, but that was a big home run that he hit. That was a big two out RBI that he drove in, hopefully, and he was in the A spot, which is a tough spot to hit in, but he rolled the lineup around a couple of times and we're all pulling for Michael Taylor. I think that's pretty much everyone who watches the Nationals, too. You want him to succeed. He frustrates you endlessly with the strikeouts, but a big night for Michael A. Taylor tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. I was... And I got to say, I certainly agreed with you in that conversation that Michael K. Taylor apparently seemed to be a not very productive piece of the Nats lineup. So I guess we have to pick someone who's underperforming and insist they be sent to Syracuse every game so that we could be made to look fools, which I'm okay with if it means the Nationals win. But just that at bat there in the eighth, he was actually first pitch swinging, which is another thing that drives me crazy about his approach to the plate, except when he lines it off the back wall of the visiting bullpen, and then I guess I'm all right with it. He singled in another run in the fourth, as you pointed out. There, I think unless that was the AB you were talking about, that's the one where he worked the full count.
I think so,
before,
yeah.
Before singling in a run there with the runner's corners. And I've wanted to believe and make Michael Taylor for so long that, you know, now that he's showing us a little flash, I don't believe it. Because I've wanted to believe in it before. And he's just too good in spring to actually be successful during the regular season. But if he can keep it up, certainly with Eaton down for the season, you know, every time that you have a team with a long playoff run, there's always some unexpected contributor. You know, someone who some random role player or bench guy or somebody who steps up and makes a big contribution, and that's just part of a winning season. And if that person can end up being Michael Taylor for the Mets for the Nats this year, I think that would be fantastic.
Would make for a great story, and I can actually hear you now because the army of people with leaf blowers who go out and clean out the stands every day seem to have finally stopped. It's a little odd thing that goes on here after every game. They go around the stands cleaning everything out with leaf blowers, just like a couple dozen people out there roaming the stands. A little insight for you there. That's cold color. Steven Strasburg on the mound. 5 2/3 scoreless last time out, 3-1-6 starts, 2.66 ERA, 2.69 FIP, 2.43 walks per nine, 7.97 K per nine, 217, 272, 320 line against in 40 2/3 before tonight. I will also note the Nats, my favorite stat in the world, 73-8 when he gets 3-plus runs to support in his starts. He didn't get that tonight, but they ended up winning anyway. Hit by pitch, 3 straight singles, sac fly, and a single in the third, 3-0. They score 3 runs early. 7 Ks, first 19 batters he faced, 71 pitches in 4 innings. A first pitch slider is called in the game day, though he has been throwing a lot of them. So slider or curve, a bender, as I put it in the notes. To Mark Trumbo in the fifth, ended up in the back rows of the red porch seats. Really just a bomb of a home run. 5-1 at that point. Ends up going 6 innings, 8 hits, 5 runs, 5 earned runs, 2 walks, 9 Ks, 100 pitches, 68 of them strikes. As Dusty Baker put it in the postgame, the one inning they blooped him to death, and the other inning they blasted him to death. Not the best outing by Strasburg, but he kept it relatively close in order for the Nationals to come back in the end.
Yeah, you look at when he gave up the 3 runs there in the second. That was all fluky, Babbitt-y, weak contact. It was, you know, maybe one of those hits was fairly solid, and there were a couple of long fly balls that were caught for outs. But you know, this is one of those things. And while you certainly have that dominant pitching outing where you can induce weak contact, sometimes the weak contact goes where they ain't, or it goes just over the infield, and you end up with that unexpected 3-run rallies like that. It's like we were playing the Cardinals, for Pete's sake. but that certainly that bomb that he gave up to Trumbo was legit. That was about as far as I've seen one hit the center there in the red porch seats. I think Ian Desmond, when he was first up, he hit one way up there. I've seen a few out that way before, but wow, he just clobbered that ball. That was
well struck.
Well hit. I just glad there was only one person on base at the time. Not the sharpest outing for Strasburg, but strangely efficient for giving up 5 runs. You know, only 100 pitches through 6. He didn't have to come out early. The bullpen wasn't that much stressed, notwithstanding that he gave up 5 runs. And the rest of the Nats decided to lift him up and win anyway. So good on everyone.
One more Strasburg note before we move on from that. I know you were watching at home, but I highly recommend you go back to the second inning and watch the leadoff at bat when he hits Jonathan Scope. He throws a curveball in there. It looks like Scope flinches to get out of the way. Somehow leaves his hand dangling over the plate, and his hand gets in the way of the ball somehow. Strasburg's reaction to it, just priceless. I have in my notes here that maybe I should go back to that hit-by-pitch in Max Scherzer's close-to-perfect game, which might be the worst hit-by-pitch of all time, but this one was a close second. And Strasburg's reaction, if you didn't see it, well worth going back there and watching it, because he's just nonplussed, I think, is the way to do it, not amused at all, and kind of staring in at home and just like, are you really calling that one a hit-by-pitch? But it was a hit-by-pitch. I don't really have a question for you there, just a recommendation to go back and watch it, because it's well worth a look.
I'll take a look.
Last note of the night I have on here is Mike Rizzo's bullpen comments from this morning. He was on 106.7 The Fan in D.C. He didn't need a closer tonight. Matt Albers, everyone's favorite reliever, did a good job in the ninth of keeping it closed for the Nationals to come back. Dusty Baker said today they could have Coda Glover, Sean Kelly back weekend. Sammy Solis has nerve inflammation in his elbow, is a little more of a question mark. That nerve takes longer to heal than if it was a muscle or something, so they're not sure when he's coming back. But Mike Rizzo went on at length talking about what the Nationals are going to do. He acknowledged that the bullpen's been bad. They've been bad, last in the league. We've got the best record in the National League, and our bullpen has been the worst in the National League. So he's owning up to what's going on here. He also said that right now you're going without Kelly, without Glover, without Solis. You have relievers in positions that they wouldn't normally be in. Any Romero, probably the last on the list of relievers going into this season, trying to close out games like last night when he blew it. He said right now they're not in any active discussions. Let me just get the exact quote right there so I don't misquote what he said. We're not actively out in the trade market looking for bullpen help right now. His essential argument was that we want to get our guys back healthy. He said we usually evaluate these things after 50 or 60 games. We know what type of team we have. And then at the trade deadline years, that's when you make some adjustments on the parts of your team that you think need adjusting. Is this the right approach for him? Can the Nationals afford the demoralizing sort of losses they've had out of the bullpen? Do you trust that? As I mentioned today, they weren't exactly really good when Kelly and Trinan and Glover were in the bullpen at the beginning of the season. It's been a problem all year. A lot of pundits and fans thought it was a problem from the start. Can they wait until the July trade deadline in your mind? Do they have to go out and get something right away and kind of settle this thing down? Or considering that they're still in first place in 22-12 after the win, can they take their time and see exactly what they need?
The Nats can certainly afford to wait. The rest of the division is having plenty of trouble. So there isn't a big rush to do something to make sure that the Nats are competitive in the division. They are. And if you rush out too fast, and especially if you start making a bunch of pronouncements about how we got to do something about the bullpen, and even if we did have to do something urgently, Rizzo would be saying the exact same things he's saying now. Everyone else out there knows it. And trying to make a trade now when people who are going to be out of it haven't realized they're out of it yet is going to drive the price up. Waiting too long to make a trade, of course, that might drive the price up too. But if there's some sweet spot in there for making a deal, I'm sure Rizzo is going to wait for that spot. And in the meantime, if you can cobble something together out of the pieces that are already in-house, I think that would certainly be workable, and it would probably be effective enough to win the division. Would it be effective in a hypothetical postseason? Well, probably less so. That's certainly where individual reliever quality is a huge issue, and we saw that spelled out explicitly in the World Series last year, where that, you know, on the strength of relievers alone, what should have been probably a five-game series was a seven-game series, and a pretty good one, I might add. So is Riz going to make a move in the end? You know, I lean towards probably, but there isn't a rush to do it. And even if he doesn't make a move, I think that's not really going to hurt the Nats' odds of making the postseason. You know, the effect would be what happens in a hypothetical postseason appearance.
Yeah, just following up on what he said, he also said that a lot of these guys have track records. The numbers they're putting out now aren't indicative of what they've done in the past, and you have to hope that they play to the back of their baseball card, as he likes to say on occasion, and give the Nationals what they expected to give. Some of them might be older. Some of them might have lost a little something, but Nationals, I don't think the relievers are as bad as they are right now. I don't think they have to rush and do something as much as some people, myself included at times, want to panic and make a reactionary move. I think you wait and get the best deal you can, add what you need when you see what you have with a fully healthy bullpen. And like I said, the Nationals with the lead in the division at this time have the time to wait and see, I think. But it doesn't help when you're losing those games. It makes it all seem a little worse. And Nationals managed to avoid that tonight, avoided their fourth straight loss, 7-6 win over the Orioles, a Matt Wieters walk-off hit. One more with the Orioles tomorrow, A.J. Cole against Dylan Bundy. The weather forecast is bad enough that I'm thinking of heading home early and watching this one on TV if they actually play it, but we'll see if they do. 7:05 tomorrow. Nats Nightly, sponsored by federalbaseball.com. Good to talk to you again, sir. Maybe we'll talk tomorrow, if not over the weekend when they play the Phillies again.
Go Nats.